Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Yeah, good.
Yes, I can. Good morning. Welcome to the Labor Beat Radio Show, an impromptu gathering of geezer labor people at the moment, and introducing a very progressive, left-wing, socialist, communist-tainted analysis of what's going on in the labor movement in the United States. I want to say, first of all, that I'm very disappointed in the outcome of the Argentine election, which I had hoped and had heard was leaning back leftward from the influence of the leader of Brazil, you know, Brother Lula, and also from the Swifties, who apparently were being mobilized by some remark that Taylor Swift made to get out and vote for against the right-wing anarchist that actually won the election. And an anti-labor guy, and just another event that will stir, you know, all kinds of security concerns in South America, and that will then be another hot spot added to the Shakespearean cauldron starting to burn around the world. I asked myself, what's going to be the effect of that on labor? I said, well, you know, the one sure thing, if you look at the history, is that prices will rise. that's one sure thing that warfare will do. Prices will go up.
Gas is going down now, John.
Well, just hold on. Won't last long.
No, probably not. So,
you just can't.
What about our big victory here with the ratification of the UAW contract?
Well, I think it is a huge victory that the whole upheaval going on right now, the strike summer, and there's it reflects, you know, what the fact that most of the working class of the country is, you know, the polls are not lying about dissatisfaction, discontent, injustices, many grievances that are, you know, firing people up and looking and forcing them for the first time in a long time, at least on this kind of scale, to think deeply about how powerful solidarity can be. I mean, in a sense, this past summer has been, you know, the America. There used to be a great leader out in the West Coast longshore named Joe Figueredo, who used to, you know, always talk about how when the working class, you know, sneezes together, the temples of Wall Street would tremble. He was great about saying that. And but, you know, it's and this summer, you know, the labor movement shrugged its shoulders at the burdens it's been carrying. And it did it together.
What about all the other car makers that are non-union that all got raises?
Well, that's what I mean. You know, it becomes a wave, right? I mean, the other employers, what are they going to do? Do you have their employees vote union and go through all the change in the structure of a company that takes place if they actually recognize a union and try to do business that way? You look at some of these companies, their entire industrial relations department knows absolutely nothing about unions other than what some anti-union attorney tells them. Nothing.
Exactly.
Right. You know,
they don't teach it in school, John.
Well, no, they wouldn't know it. Okay, so they would, in terms of handling collective bargaining negotiations, They're ignorant. So the company has to go out to get attorneys who are just weapons for hire. I mean, you know, they don't get, they don't actually care.
You know, back to your point, the rise of young people in all of these movements and in the labor movement, it's just such a refreshing, it refreshes everything. It refreshes the fight back, you know, and they got all this polling about young people and Biden and all that crap. Young people are rising up. And, you know, I mean, of course we have to have a united front approach, but I don't think the young people are going to go for, you know, some third party candidate or anything like that, because they know they're smart. They know what's going on and they know what's going to happen if Trump wins. So
yeah, they're not,
they're not for Trump.
They're not for Trump. Not the people, not the, no, none of this movement. No, they're not Trump.
And they're smart. They're not going to go for a third party candidate if that's going to guarantee that Trump gets a win, or even if it makes it, you know, somewhat possible for him to get a win. They're not going to do that. And they're going to be out in the streets signing up people to vote and doing that kind of stuff.
Yes, but, you know, I'd be careful. I mean, you can't, I would not make too many assumptions, you know.
No, we
didn't believe the polls before 2016. I didn't. But they were right.
Yeah.
At least a bunch of them were, you know. So, I mean, the point is, you got to be, I mean, you know, it's like you depend upon the input from as many people as possible and sources as possible to test, you know, whether your own understanding is really wide enough, you know, to take it all in. I sense that we're that the rising up is causing a big disturbance in among capital. And it's causing a there is a reaction. And because they tend toward monopoly, so many of these big wealth centers, and is that their first reaction is just to raise prices because they can, right? They don't have as much competition, so they can, and just pass on. But they also know. I don't think it's a secret to them that there's going to be a counter effect that rising of prices wipes out, you know, for a lot of people, this great good news about the economy, okay, that keeps coming out as well. And it is, you know, GDP is rising. The rate of price rises is going down, but it's still rising, right?
Yep.
And whether it's always rising faster than the catch-up economics of this big bump in the labor movement, right? Yeah, it's a big question in my mind. I mean, I don't think it's yet, the data is not 100% clear about whether people are really going up or going down in reality, okay? So you got to be careful. You know, in this state, West Virginia, I don't see a significant change in the weather yet, political weather. And it's, you know, it's rooted in all kinds of grievances for which people are blaming the wrong people, but they're not happy. By the way, I have a theory I want to test you guys out about Manchin and Bloomberg, since they're both part of this no labels, and Joe's wants to run. He's not ruling out running for president. Now, Manchin is a guy that does not like to lose. You know, that's why I read him. He's a lot of things, but he doesn't like losing. And he doesn't actually like being so much of a spoiler if it costs him, too. But I'm guessing that, and Bloomberg's a Republican, probably in the considers himself in the Eisenhower style, if Eisenhower had been the fourth richest man in the world. But I get the feeling that these guys have decided that the Republican Party is going to self-implode, that it can't, once it got hooked on Trump or a cult-like thing like Trump, that it basically has shot itself in the thing and it can't recover. And it's going to die. And therefore, these guys are going to set up a new second party, since the U.S. system doesn't is not really friendly to a third party. The way we're set up makes it very difficult with winner-take-all elections to ever have a more parliamentary type of operation. So that means they would become a second party, the new Republican Party, since the old Republican Party seems to have been, you know, gotten taken poison, killed itself. What do you think?
Well, I think they're realists too, and they know that they're not going to be able to do that before this election. I mean, that's a long
right.
process.
Yeah.
And they know that. And they know that Trump is going to be very bad for them. And
right.
I really do think that they're going to at least stay out of it. And some of them will even back. Well, they won't do it publicly, but they'll do things to help Biden.
Yeah, I think so, too. And they're going to suck the middle out of going toward Trump if they can. And I think that's more a better outlook, because it doesn't seem like either of these guys are. Speaking of Bloomberg or Manchin,
yeah.
for that matter. Yeah, Manchin's going to be speaking on behalf of the energy industry, but they don't want
yeah.
to have national upheaval either, I don't think,
mm-hmm.
the energy companies. Somebody will think about nationalizing them.
Really? That's an idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you continuously just abuse people and there's no other targets left, everybody else has been, sidelined, they're going to come after you.
That's fine.
So do you think the country is entering a state of greater or less instability overall, regardless? Just to take not just the election, but, you know, do you see evidence of instability, and do you think it's increasing going forward or likely to be moderated? What do you think?
I think they're unwilling to do what's necessary to save the world. They do need to nationalize the oil industry. That's the only way they're going to get off it, in my opinion.
I don't know. I think when they look at the world situation and they see the rise of fascism all over the world, that there are plenty of them that don't see that as a good alternative. And I think that's beginning to have an influence too. And by the way, I think has an influence around the world. I mean, there's more and more uprisings against this kind of thought and this kind of direction all around the world. And I think, you know, that's a very good reaction to it. And I think it'll continue.
Right. The right now, for example, next year, the interest on the national debt will exceed the military budget.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
That's a big moment.
It is. I mean,
it's an explosive moment.
Dean Becker was talking about it day before yesterday, that we're actually there. Well, it depends on how you count it. You're actually there now, but there won't be any doubt at all next year.
Talk about too big to fail. My God.
And now there are calls to increase the military budget, you know, that all these cauldrons burning around the world and the increase in instability, which leads to political instability, you know, how do you maintain this dominating economic and military position if you don't go out and, you know, engage? And then the military decides what the strategy of the country is. I mean, once people are dying, the generals decide. Come on, really, unless they're a miracle takes place. So that's a little troubling. And it's not true. I you know, there's a left-wing theory called MMT. I don't think it's true. It does, that says, oh, well, as long as you can print your own currency, you can inflate. It doesn't matter. You can do anything you want. Well, it turns out that, you know, to get any credit with that money, you're going to have to get the bank to believe it's worth something. I mean, if it's not... And so, and if they don't think it's worth something, the interest rates will go up. That's the risk. Then it might be worth nothing. And there's no way to stop that. And now that the federal government, of course, has, in order to counter the inflation, has raised the interest rates up to, you know, well, above 4%, right? They're sitting above 4 right now. It depends on what you're trying to borrow exactly, but it's still considerably away from what the target is. Anyway, you got to, once you do that, the cost of borrowing goes up and the cost of the federal deficit goes up big time as well. As I don't see how people are keeping the housing market alive right now, actually. I mean, yeah. Most of the savings that was there before, during the pandemic, when the big spending, you know, and income support went out, most of that is gone. And so people aren't having a lot of surplus. But if you buy a house now, you're going to pay $1,000 a month more in a mortgage rate than you would have 3 or 4 years ago. That's a lot of money for a family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back to your point about printing money, I think all of us with kids need to go back and look in our closets.
Yeah. Oh, dear. And what did you find, Scott?
Monopoly game. Lots of printed money in it.
I know. Yeah, but eventually the consumers can't buy. Okay, yeah, you can raise. You don't have any competition. You can raise your prices, but eventually, you know, you and me, we're out of money. Sorry. It's just so I don't see any much stability.
That's partially why they're getting away with all this shit about gold.
Right. But, well, what do you mean by that? Explain what you mean by that.
Okay, so you buy a bunch of gold. How are you going to spend it?
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah, how are you going to get it, ship it across the ocean like we used to?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Be sunk by a German submarine. Oh, shit.
Well, then, you know, 100 years from now, the kids can go down and find it.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, if people think it's going to the only reserve of value, if they think that well, mm-hmm. they're wrong. I mean, in a way.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's this rush to safety if you fear instability.
Right.
You know, I mean, the whole capitalist system can just teeter on this brink. And usually, you know, the whole theory, I love this part of capitalism where it says, you know, you hear about that somebody went bankrupt. And you know, an ordinary like me, I mean, I start to think, oh man, all those people are going to be out of work, you know, and what are they going to do? But that's not the way. That's not the way the capitalist thinks. You know, they think differently. They think, ah, there's an opportunity. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of property, and maybe people that can be purchased cheap. And I can figure out a way to reorganize it and make money on it.
Yep.
So, well, I mean, there's two ways of thinking about what's good and what's bad, or what's, you know, what's important and what's not. But I don't know. I think we're, most of the things that we take to fix it, take a higher tax rate on wealth and corporations, for example, which would probably go a long way to the debt. Take, you adopt a, let's just say, a more peaceful coexistence foreign policy than the U.S., that than the one that we have that is, you know, always on fire from the defense industry, okay? So, and what happens if you do those two things? And why couldn't you, and then you, you know, the whole thing about what are you going to spend, what are you going to do with all the soldiers that are no longer deployed? What are you going to do with the folks that, how do you lift up the bottom in a significant way in a short enough period of time so that people can say, look, change was really possible? You had a kind of experience like that in the 30s that was an agonizing and uplifting, both, you know, but we need to have that uplift. You know, can anybody put it back together given the divisions that the country currently has? Those are pretty important.
Well, you know, that's another reason for Biden, because I think that the experience that we had as a country after World War II was with Roosevelt is something that is viable today. And that is, you know, let's take all those people and put them to work doing the things that need to be done and building the things that need to be built. You know, that I think that's totally viable under a Biden administration. I mean, he praises what Roosevelt did, and he understands what Roosevelt did. And that puts people back to work, that puts food on the table, and that gets things done that we need in the country.
I would agree. He got the money. He's doing it.
Right.
Unemployment's low. Jobs are out there. People are working.
Yeah.
Did you hear that? They refused Tesla at the docks in Sweden. Did you see that, John?
I saw that article. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, that's the first step, man. That's the first step.
No, that was good news.
Yeah, if other countries start doing that.
That's good news.
Yeah.
But look at the response to Elon Musk.
Wow.
I mean, people are sick of
him. People hate him.
That's right.
Well,
now he's a Nazi.
Now all we need to do is get some of his money back. What's really not his money to begin with. Let's put it that way.
Well, good luck with that. He's got that satellite business of his. He's got his hooks and everything, and he's big. He's got a big installation in China. I don't think it's going anywhere.
Well, we could get him out of this country, but still do better here.
Is he turn? You think he's a Trumper?
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Has he actually said?
He'd rather see Hitler, but Trump will do.
Is that what he said? I haven't followed what he said recently. I mean, he said some anti-Semitic remark on X, I heard, and that's caused a whole bunch of people to not advertise on him or companies. But I didn't actually see the original statement that he made yet. Someone, I don't know, somehow everybody said it was terrible. So I assume so. He's raised in South Africa, right? His dad sent him to a fight school to grow up.
But the what happened on X was that a guy put up this neo-fascist thing about how Hitler was right about white people being superior because of the inferiority of other races, and da 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 da. There's a whole string of stuff like that,
right?
And that's being done again today to try to eliminate the white race or whatever, something like that.
We're being replaced. That's right.
We're being replaced. Yes, that's right. And he said that the guy was absolutely right.
Yeah, right.
And that's why, I mean, it is a good sign that advertisers started pulling their stuff because of that kind of crap, but it's not enough.
So, well, we need a detention camp, I understand, a re-education camp. We could repurpose Guantanamo. I'm sure the Cuban government would agree. Well, they'd have to be paid. I'm sure they'd have to be compensated for all kinds of former things, but they might entertain a new hospitality house for re-education of some folks that.
Then we'd have to
as long as we're going to do away with death penalties, because otherwise, you know, you're sitting there with Lincoln being told by a number of the Revolutionary House members that they should hang every Confederate officer on every available tree between Washington and Richmond.
Yeah, I remember.
As part of the settlement. And Lincoln said, nah, we're not going to do that.
But, well, you know, there's plenty of people that say that we should hang Trump. And I tell them they're absolutely wrong. And they say, what do you mean I'm absolutely wrong? And I say, well, if you really want to punish Trump, make sure he gets convicted, gets life in prison in a crowded cell with four other people.
Why is he not in jail now?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know what? It's not impossible that he might go to jail.
No, it's not impossible, but why is it possible that he's not?
Well, I'm just saying it's beginning to look like on this, you know, the abuse of people or whatever that whole thing is. It looks like that, you know, they can fine him the gag order thing. They can fine him a couple times, but if he keeps it up, they can actually put him in jail.
Oh boy. Well, okay.
But I think, with the Secret Service and all of that stuff, it's not going to be a bad jail. It'll be a Mar-a-Lago jail.
He'll be under house arrest by his own security. I don't know. I think
don't even put that out there.
I think you got a problem. You get an ex-president who doesn't play by the rules. And what do you do? I mean, you know, you have a set of rules, so you don't have to go out and shoot the former leader, you know, to get him to shut up.
Right.
You know, you got a newly elected person, let him, you know, if they can't do their thing because these people with big resources are, well, then you got to, what we tried to, but that leads to, you know, you got to contain a potential civil war every decade. It just grows, right? And you got to find a better way. I don't know. But it's tough right now.
Is it?
the level of violence in the country and now in the world, the Cold War. I mean, I'm sorry. I agree with Biden on most of his domestic thing, but he's got a Cold War policy. You know?
Yes, he does.
And it's impacted the European thing, the Chinese thing, and it's made him hostage to, I'm sorry, the guy that's running Netanyahu. If there's any difference between him and a fascist, I don't know what it is.
That's right.
I don't. I heard him speak 50 years ago at the University of Buffalo. He was one then, and he still is.
He sure is.
So, you know, but then when you hire a hitman, he hires you too, you know, and that's the whole thing. You know, I believe I was just rereading it. You know, in 1948, the UN had a resolution that it should be a two-sided state. There should not be two states. There should not be a religious state. You know, there should be a unitary state. And of course, the United States and the UK at the time sabotaged that proposal. And, you know, the Civil War continued. And every attempt, you know, to go two state has failed because someone has to have the right to an ethnically or religiously sectarian state. And they say they do have to, right? Because that's the only kind of security that the Jewish people could ever even hope for, given the history of the 20th and 19th centuries, especially in Europe. Well, it's not an easy question to answer. On the other hand, how ethnically pure states survive in this globalized world, I don't see how that happens. I don't see how it happens. Unless they were completely self-sustaining. And of course, you know, in a way, the whole U.S. and U.K. Endorsement of the so-called Zionist state in the beginning to plant another religious state in an area just filled with already a number of religious states already, that was not going to be a provocation to, you know, and to arm that state with including nuclear weapons. Come on. Who was looking... You know, it's like a great power World War One game. The whole thing. And Israel, nobody in the end, I think, was played more in that or any more than the Israeli people. Mm-hmm. You know, who now in themselves in a what can they possibly do? Well, what can the Palestinian people possibly do? So,
you know, leading off from that, I think that another powerful thing that's happening in the U.S. is to see how much of the labor movement is mobilizing for a ceasefire. And, you know, all kinds of unions are circulating those petitions for a ceasefire. They're organizing delegations to see senators and congressmen calling for a ceasefire. I mean, I know that's not an easy question, but the fact that so much of the labor movement is participating in that is a very good sign, I think.
Well, it should be. I mean, everybody should be because, I mean, to say, oh, well, they killed 1,000 people. Let's kill 20,000 in reply. Or how about 40? Or how about 50? Or how about liquidate everything? So, I mean, that's not going to, I can't imagine what's going on right now, for example, in the neighboring Arab countries. I really can't even imagine it. What the rage and grief must be, and I can't imagine my wife has a close friend at work whose sister lost a child in Israel. Was one of the first 1,000 killed in the uprising that Hamas organized. And, you know, the grief is just, you know, it's terrible. And but I don't, I it's hard to find clean hands in the matter, don't you think? It's hard to find clean hands. Yeah, and I watched Al Biden. Look, he looked like he was in pain, but you know, he's bound to it. He's bound. The Israeli military and the U.S. military are just they're married. I mean, or it's a blood relationship. They that you can't unstick it. They can't, or they can't. I don't know who would unstick it, but they can't.
Well, I mean, and that's why he can't even say he's for a ceasefire.
No.
And you know he really is, but he can't say it.
He looks like he is, especially he made some remarks, you know, that, hey, why don't you stop? Oh, why don't you have a pause? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but right. Told him to fuck himself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what he's going to do in response, ultimately, but in the meantime, doesn't look like much. Plus, the military, they hit Syria. I don't know whether it was justified or not. Who knows? Sometimes, you know, these guys feel, well, they won't believe you unless you shoot a couple first, and then they'll believe you. You know, that kind of thing.
I think I read something like that in Mein Kampf.
Yeah, it's that kind of, well, you know, it's a, you know, it's like an Arnold Schwarzenegger negotiating tactic in a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know, we'll have to take it like that. Hey, what do you think about Sean Payne's idea of having lining up contracts to expire, or having just make the strike bigger?
Absolutely.
You know.
You know, and another thing is that people have learned from Sean Payne and his way of handling the big three. People, the unions are getting much more creative about strikes and ways to put pressure on the companies. And I think that's just, I mean, they're coming up with all these, you know, the rolling strike thing and all of that kind of stuff. But they really are rethinking how to put pressure on the companies and how to win right. things from them. And I think that's going to continue because, again, look at all these young workers that are in this. You know, I've probably brought this up before. You know, I have some very good friends in the Starbucks Workers United or whatever it's called. And
right.
this whole idea that that they are going to call for a national contract for Starbucks workers. And by the way, the Amazon workers are doing the same thing. That's what led to the CIO. That's what led to the strength of the, and look what happened after the CIO was created, all the organizing of industrial unions and all of that kind of stuff. And that kind of energy is coming back into the labor movement from young people. I just think that's fantastic.
Bigger strikes to come?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. And a lot of them are anti-war. A lot of them are against the military budget.
Well, what happens to the military workers when you kill the military budget?
Well, then they'll have to build faster rail, public rail services.
Right.
They'll have to do more to mediate climate change.
All these things, you know, like I thought your answer last week to the AI question was the best of all, Scott. You know, let's, well, solve the whole problem just working 2 or 3 hours a week or four. And then, you know, yeah, it'll be so productive. It'll be so productive that, you know, what the hell? That's enough, right? But all that stuff presumes, in my view, a virtual overthrow of corporate power. I don't see how you can sit down at a table and negotiate that with them, because, you know, it's true that, you know, trade unionism can generate a certain amount of solidarity, mostly in defense, rarely offensive. But the capital can move money in a million ways, okay, especially today, even more than in the old days.
Right.
And so their weapons, without having political power, their weapons are ultimately going to defeat you. You might have a time of success, but the money will reorganize and come at you from every flank. So you have to have political power, and I don't think you're not going to negotiate it with them. You're going to have to beat them badly. And win the people to the idea that they don't have the rights that they currently have, or at least as many, and none of the decisive ones. Otherwise, you know, I'm quoting, you know, Vladimir Lenin, but I happen to believe he's going to make a comeback.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason I do is not anything having to do particularly with Russia at all or anything else. But the fact that, you know, when you're dealing with these entrenched power situations, is that when they weaken, they don't retreat. They redouble their resistance. And that's why they don't want to make a deal with you that says they're no longer king. They don't want to make that deal. And I think if you have that in your mind, then you keep your mind, we keep our minds focused on, in a way like Sean Fain, but bigger and more political, okay? You know, we have this power, but unless we exercise it at a certain level to get the reins of the state, or at least the key levers in the economy, things like that, you know, they can kick our ass, you know, 5 years later. It's just, I think that's just the way it is.
You know, and going into that a bit farther, I think it's really important to see some of the steps in the right direction. And that's why I'm really heartened by the rise of the idea of creating co-ops, because it gives workers a way to, you know, take care of themselves and to make a contribution to the rest of the working class. And you know, it's happening. You know, I think I've said before, or talked before, about the Mondragon idea, and that's already saved jobs in the steelworkers union, where plants have shut down and then the workers have taken over the plant and reopened it and started building things that we need and putting people back to work. And I just, you know, I mean, that it's a small step, but it's the fact that people are beginning to think about that now is another step in the right direction, isn't it?
He's a good friend. His name's Jim, I think. He's a good friend of Carl Davidson. He's in Chicago someplace. He's specializing in this, like, kind of conversion of some company into co-ops, isn't he? I don't remember his name. There's old age creeping in again. Jim Swigert? No. Maybe I'm thinking about that old preacher out in the Southwest. I got his name confused. Yeah. Jimmy Swaggart. Oh, God.
Yeah. Funny we would recognize that name and not this one.
I don't know. He was on the program one time with Carl. Carl got him on, and he had an interesting project in Chicago of converting small businesses to self that had were threatened with bankruptcy into co-ops. Mm. He had a couple of victories. That's what he claimed, you know. So he was an old SDSer or a subkind from way back. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Again, it's happening in other places, and not just like Mondragon. People are just doing it.
Speaking of the nationalization thing, the railroad workers rank and file or group that seems to be very active is calling for railway nationalization. I just wondered if you had heard of anything spreading on that along that line. I'm not quite.
Well, I know it's out there, and I know that some people are pushing it, but I don't have a lot of details about it.
Another great proposal.
It's an idea that's going.
Another great proposal that just hard to see liberal billionaires going for. You know, you could probably convince Bill Gates that oil should be nationalized, but he'd be talked out of it pretty quick by those guys who said, if you come after me, I'm going to make sure they come after you too. So I think that's a big restraint on any of those guys helping you out with that stuff.
Well, what's that one billionaire that's sort of liberal?
Soros?
What'd you say?
You meant Soros, the one that the right wing goes after all the time, or George Soros?
Yeah. I mean, he might take on some of this stuff.
Yeah, he might.
He's funded some good things in the past, or he's helped fund some good things.
But yeah, but they tend to have. I mean, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Oh, God.
I mean, I just don't know whether you can trust any of those folks.
You can't.
I mean, if they want to
take the little steps you can take.
and they all have been close enough to power to know that if you're going to give somebody money, you should get something back.
Really? You think that's built into their ethos?
Well, it's part of the family supper. I mean, come on. You know, how did you get your $1 billion, Daddy? I didn't get it by giving it away.
And I worked hard for it. All those hours I had to sit there thinking.
Well, you know, some of them are very active. Sure. But, you know, once you got the $1 billion, it's not yours. It owns you. I mean, it really is true. If you don't do something with it, somebody will relieve you of it, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, I don't know what it's like, you know. But
I think I've heard of this guy.
Trump?
Moving in that direction. Trump?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like something got a hold of him and spirited him into the fantasy.
He's jealous because he's not as rich as they are.
I know. Well, that's true.
But I'm
in the minority. I don't think he's dumb.
No, I don't think he's dumb.
I think he's played the country. I'd never expected him to double down this time around. I didn't really. I thought, you know, hey, you're going to head it into the whole Justice Department is after you. You know, all your former and many enemies, you know, have no love for you at all. Even most of your friends, so-called. And yet, he runs right up to the firing squad and says, fuck you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting. And we know from his first divorce that he kept a copy of Mein Kampf on his bedstead. On his bedside stand, right. And he obviously studied it. He really understood what Hitler did, and he's doing it. He's trying to do it again.
Very similar style. Yeah. You know, I think I'm trying to, you know, most of the movies about Hitler sort of portray him as a complete lunatic and almost as a Charlie Chaplin kind of figure, right?
Yeah.
you know, sometimes. Oh. I remember there was one that was part of that series. It was like a 70s series about World War II. It went on for, it was a mini series, went on for months. And they, I remember they did have a scene in there where Robert Mitchum was playing a U.S. naval official of some sort and met mm-hmm. Hitler. And the script had been, I don't know where it actually came from in that one case, but Hitler analyzed the European situation and the position of the Americans with perfect accuracy.
Yeah.
You know? And he says, well, you may decide that you're going to decide our fate, but I will cook you a stew that will poison you for 1,000 years.
Mm.
You know, and
he's
playing on German nationalism, you know, in the Versailles, the whole Versailles mess.
Yeah.
You know, just
yeah. like, no, that's to underestimate who you're up against is a big problem. Yeah.
Anyway, well, I see JB has headed off to his next meeting, so we can break it today. I want to talk, I wouldn't mind having a chance to talk with you, Scott, a little bit about, you know, what to do with this kind of a thing. I mean, I talked to Steve once about, you know, would it make any sense to have radio program or radio podcasts that are coming out from the Labor Commission or the CP, for example, or something like that, and where you could have conversations about labor from a communist perspective or Marxist perspective or what, or mm-hmm. whatever you want to define as the broad left. I'm always debating with myself about, well, what kind of discussion? Well, the one that reaches the most people with the most effective news. But on the other hand, you know, you see the situation so unstable and the weaknesses of Biden's coalition are big. Not so much on defense, you know. To defend against mm-hmm. Trump, I think they're strong enough to do that, okay? To defend. Mm-hmm. But to go, where to go forward?
Yep.
I don't know, you know. And the winds are blowing on all sides, right? You know, so.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. But anyway, what made me think about it and see a way that could be done. I don't have to do it. I mean, but just the idea that you were you could have a discussion that was you felt was strong enough to present to the public, right? You know, and at least take it in and see how that might work, what kind of feedback it would generate. I think the program that that Joe and Prasanna and was it Scott and Anita, right? Okay. Anyway, it works pretty good, especially since they keep it to 30. They keep it to 30 minutes, right? And it works pretty good. It takes some work to produce, obviously, you know. But you know, it's.
I think I'll talk to Steve, but I think we should put that on the agenda of the next commission meeting.
All right, see if it's, yeah, we could get a
discussion
at least a group
about
of people.
How we might make that work. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
No, I think that's a great idea. I really do. And I do think we would get a bigger audience.
I do too. You know, I mean, I think everyone's asking these big questions, right? And
that's
they
right.
see the movement, they see the power there. Okay. Away, we have a new lawnmower. Which field are we going to plow?
Exactly. And I even think it would help with recruiting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it would too. Yeah, it would. you know, I mean, just have a healthy
discussion to what, you know, to the ideas and stuff.
Anyway, and all right.
Okay.
All right. Take care, brother. All right. Have a great Thanksgiving. Okay.
You too. You all too. Right. Thanks, man.
Regards to Roberta too.
Yep. Yeah. Same from us.
Okay. Bye bye.
Okay.
Recording stopped.